We're going to go ahead and get started. It's good to see everyone here this morning. I know we'll have those who will be walking in. Today, we're going to be looking at Job. That's on our list to study on this occasion. And I'm thankful for it because it actually fell in line with the studies that we're doing by way of articles throughout the year. We're taking a book every week and writing an article. The book of Job was so extensive and so meaty that I actually wrote two articles. So you'll also have one for next week, part two of the book of Job. And it's this amazing book this is. When you consider Job, his actual name means persecuted, or it means hated. I thought that was interesting that his name meant that, because he probably thought he was hated in many respects. This book is probably written about 21 BC, 2100 BC. He's probably a contemporary of Abraham in that area. Some would even say that he's a contemporary with Shem, Ham, and Japheth. I thought that was interesting as well. Nevertheless, we know for a fact that he was a patriarch. And the reason why we know he was a patriarch is because of the sacrifices that he made on behalf of his children. I thought it was interesting. In Job chapter 1 and verse number 5, we notice something about this great man, Job. There the Bible teaches us, so it was when the days of feasting had run their course, that Job would send and sanctify them, and he would rise early in the morning, talking about his sons, and offer burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, "It may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts." Thus Job did regularly. One thing that I thought was interesting is that he would burn these sacrifices, or offerings rather, on behalf of his children. Yet when you go to the book of Ezekiel, God said on two occasions, chapter 41, I believe it is that if Daniel, Job, and Abraham was in this, if they were in this city, they would only deliver their own souls based upon their righteousness. And I thought that was very interesting that he would do this on behalf of his sons. But it also teaches us that Job was a righteous man and very cognizant of the attitudes of his children, his sons, if you will. So he wanted to make sure, at least from what I'm gathering, that his sons were right and that he had a good conscience toward God in that respect. As I was thinking about that, I thought about just fatherhood, just being a father and wanting to make sure that my children are right with the Lord. So what am I doing? So I thought about that, but we'll have more to say about that here in a few minutes. We notice on three occasions. Number one, we notice just the book of Job. Whoever wrote this book, inspired by God, we know, says something about this great man. So we see the character of Job. Notice Job 1, verse number 1. Job 1 and verse number 1. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man, notice the characteristics of him. Blameless and upright, one who feared God, shunned evil. All right, so we see those four things that the inspired man of God who wrote the book of Job said this about Job. Now, it's interesting. On two other occasions, this is said. Two other occasions, but it's said by Jehovah. Now, as I was thinking about this and putting these thoughts together for the last few weeks as I've been studying the book of Job, my mind has been opened up on so many levels. I thought about what God said to the evil one, to the adversary, to Satan. Drop down to verse number six. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came, Satan meaning adversary, among them. And the Lord said to Satan, where do you come? From where do you come? So Satan answered the Lord and said, from going to and fro on the earth, walking back and forth on it. Then the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth? Now notice what is said about Job, the character of this man. The Bible says, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil. Now, that's powerful that God was able to say that about Job. This is not commentary. This is not someone else giving us their thoughts on Job. This is God saying this about Job. Another occasion, chapter 2, and look at verse number 3. We have the same situation, if you will, and we'll talk about the events that took place between these two occasions. But notice what is said again about Job. Verse 3, then the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil? And notice what is said about him. And still he holds fast to his integrity, although you entice me against him to destroy him without cause. Now, let's talk about this just for a few minutes. Three occasions we see something said about Job in a very positive manner, dealing with his character. We know that we're not talking about his exterior. We're talking about the man on the inside, the inner man, his thoughts, his ideas, his mentality, his will, his intellect, who he is, his characteristics. He's a moral man. He's a spiritual man. He's a family man. He's a blessed man. He's a conscientious man. I will say those things again because I believe they're worthy of our consideration. He is a moral man, a spiritual man, a family man, a blessed man, and a conscientious man. We see that in chapter 1, verses 1 through verse number 5. Now, one of the reasons why I say that is because we're going to notice something about what God said to Satan. He said, have you what? Considered. What does that word mean? Anybody, just give me a definition of what you think that word means. Have you thought about it? All right. Anyone else? Sir?
Evaluated.
Okay, evaluated. All right, what else? Those are good answers. Okay. So, God asked Satan, have you considered my servant Job? Have you set your mind on him? It's about four or five different definitions in the Hebrew. Very interesting. The context is going to tell us what that word means. As I was wrestling with the definition and the context, I gathered that God was saying, have you put your thoughts on him? Have you focused upon him? And brethren, that's rich. Yes, sir. Did you have your hand up, Brother Dennis? Yes, sir. Yes. Yes. That's right. Yes, sir. And that's why I wanted to come from the vantage point that I did, because you see the type of man that he is and the type of man that God said he is. And in essence, God said, have you set your thoughts on him? Have you focused upon him? In essence, God is saying, I have. Have you? And apparently the evil one had. Why? Because there was a response by Satan. Notice verse number 9, Job 1 verse 9. Job 1 verse 9. So Satan answered the Lord and said, does Job fear God for nothing? Have you made or have you not made a hedge around him, around his household, and around all that he has on every side? You have blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. Now, let's stop and let's think about this. This great man of God, great characteristic, family man, blessed man, spiritual man, conscientious man. And Satan has set his heart upon him. Yes, sir. So Satan was looking at the exterior and the things that God has blessed him with, but God was looking at the interior and the type of man he was. That's in line with 1 Samuel 16, I believe it's verse number, I believe it's 17 or 19. Let me make sure of that. I just want to make this quick little point here. 1 Samuel 16. And I said 1 Samuel, but it is 1 Samuel. Make sure this is it. 1 Samuel 16. What's that, 25? Where is that? It's when they was picking a king, and God told him, man looks at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. Verse 7? Yes, there it is. But the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or at his physical stature, because I have refused him, for the Lord does not see as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. Now, Satan is not like God. Okay? Satan was looking at the exterior. Great point, Brother Dennis. But also, we want to make a point here is that notice how God had blessed Job. And friends, let me make this quick point. Matthew 6, verses 24 through 34 is still rich. That God takes care of the lilies of the field, the fowl of the air. Surely he'll take care of his people. He has always taken care of his people. Here, this upright man who shunned evil, he hated evil, he got away from evil, he ran from it. And the evil one, the adversary, recognized this, that the Lord blessed the work of his hand. Now, that's interesting too. That Job wasn't a lazy man waiting for wealth to come his way. He was a worker. So we see that. There's so much in this text that it's just too much to gather in. But I want to make another point considering the word consider. He said, have you considered, have you laid your heart upon my servant, Job? He wasn't no one else's servant. Have you considered him? Have you thought about him? Have you put your heart upon him? The answer is, it seemed like he has. But he couldn't touch him. He couldn't get next to him, if you will. Notice, God gives him permission. And notice verse number 11, the latter part. He says, okay, but now stretch out your hand, touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to his face, to your face. Now, this is Satan telling God this. Now, the word curse there is the Hebrew word barak. And it's interesting that it is translated in Genesis 1 verse 22 as blessed. I'm like, huh? I'm wrestling with this, Brother Williams. I'm like, what? This doesn't make any sense to me. It's translated curse. We'll talk more about that here in a minute. Hopefully that'll whet your palate. I just thought this interesting. We'll talk more about that. But Satan said that he's going to curse you to your face. Notice. verses 13 through verse number 19. We'll come back to that word because it's going to be very important here in a few minutes. God gives him this permission and the onslaught begins. All right. Remember what God gave him permission to do. You can touch everything that he has. Okay. Everything that he has. Four things we see. Number one, we see in verse number 13, you have the sons and daughters, they're eating, they're drinking, they're at the eldest brother's house. Messenger comes to Job, the oxen were plowing, and the donkeys were feeding beside them. When the Sabaeans raided them, took them away. Indeed, they have killed the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you. Now think about this news coming at Job, okay? And as that news is coming at Job, and this guy is still talking, this messenger is still talking, here comes the second one. While he was still speaking, another also came. It's like, okay, he's talking to Job and he's just waiting in line, waiting for him to finish his speech, finish his talking. And now he's coming behind him and he says, a fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them. And I alone escaped to tell you. While he was speaking, still speaking, the Chaldeans formed three bands. Remember, Abraham was from the Ur of Chaldees, Genesis chapter 11, raided the camels and took them away, yes, and killed the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone come to tell you. And while he was speaking, back to back, the back to back, verse 18, your sons and your daughters were eating and drinking wine in the oldest brother's house, and suddenly a great wind came across the wilderness and struck the four corners of the house and fell on the young people and they're dead and I alone escaped to tell you. Back to back to back to back. Friends, this is an extreme case. The reason why I say this is an extreme case, most likely life doesn't happen like this. However, Ecclesiastes 9 verse number 11, time and chance happen to all men. But this is an extreme case. And the more I studied this and been looking at it, and I know over the next few years, if the Lord gives me time and opportunity to study the book of Job again, I'll see more. But as of right now, this is an extreme case. I personally have never heard of these type of cases. Back to back to back to back. But it also made me think about what the Apostle Paul said in 2 Corinthians 4 and verse number 8. As it relates to the apostleship and how we are troubled on every side. It seems like I can't catch a break. I can't catch a break here in this, in my life, and here in my life, and here in this, in my life, and up here. I just can't catch a break. Job here, keep in mind, he's had a great life. He hasn't had these type of issues whatsoever. And now, one after another, after another, after another, and notice Job's response. Verse number 20. Then Job arose, rent his clothes, shaved his head, fell to the ground. He worshiped. Now brethren, that's a powerful response right there. Can someone articulate to me why is that a powerful response? Yes. Many would have blamed God. What else? Why is this happening to me? What else? It's a good point. It's a great point. Anyone else? Powerful. And we know that there's pain in his heart because he's rending his clothing, he's shaving his head, he's fallen to the ground, and he still has perspective. It's difficult. Very difficult. And then notice what he says. Because we can't leave this out, because this is part of the worship that he renders. Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. In all this, Job did not sin nor charge God with wrong. What a powerful attitude in one of the most extreme cases. We've had some extreme cases, at least in our mindset, but this is an extreme case. Back to back to back to back. And his response was, okay, I'm going to kneel down and I'm going to rent my clothes. I'm going to shave my head. And I'm going to worship God. Friends, God is not teaching us that this is easy, but he is teaching us. He's teaching us some valuable lessons here in the book of Job. Chapter 2. Here we have, remember we discussed Satan coming to the Lord again, and the Lord's response to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? And we've been through that, and God gives him permission now to touch his person, save his life. Verse number 4 and 5, okay? We see that in verse number 6 as well. Satan leaves the presence of the Lord, struck Job with painful boils. Now he's in touch his person, okay? And from the crown of his head to the sole of his feet, and Job responds by taking potsherds and he's scraping himself. He's sitting in ashes. And his wife says, do you still hold fast to your integrity? Remember that word, curse, that the evil one used? But stretch out your hand, touch all that he has, and he will curse you. Chapter 1, verse number 11. Same word right here. The word literally means, and it's a euphemism that it was used during that time, of treason. Satan was telling the Lord that if I do this, Job will, he will curse you. He will charge you with treason. What's treason? Anyone have an idea? What does it mean to commit treason? Mm-hmm. So what does it mean to commit treason? When a person commits treason against their nation, what does that look like? Mm-hmm. Now, let me tell you why. You see this word here, and it's translated blessed in Genesis 1. God blessed them. Be fruitful and multiply. Same word, barak. But we know that it has to be a negative connotation because of Job's response. This is how hermeneutics work. This is how, when we go to the text and we allow the context to tell us what the word means, curse God and die. But he said to her, you speak as one of the foolish women speak. Shall we indeed accept good from God, and shall we not accept adversity? And all of this, but Job did not sin with his lips. So this word here is translated curse. It's a good word. The Hebrew has these word pictures, gives us something to see in our minds. And one thing about this situation, and I often tell myself and have told myself, hold on. Job's wife also lost livestock. Job's wife also lost 10 children. Job's wife also sees her husband in the state that he's in. Isn't that humbling? We can look at Job's wife and say, you know, she's foolish. How could she do him that way? She lost something too. This sets the stage for the book of Job. Because when we get to the latter part, and really we're already there, verses 11 through the end of the chapter, now we have his three friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar, who come from afar, and they come to console. They come to comfort Job. They come to give him the things that he need in order for his soul, his spirit, to be refreshed, to get through this adversity. This was the purpose of their coming. But this sets the stage for the whole book. And it also teaches us with the things that Bildad and Zophar and Eliphaz says, and how they saw Job in his situation. Consider this. It also shows that they're not God, and they don't know all the ins and outs of the situation. This book taught me, and I have applied some things just within the last couple of weeks, just because of this study. Why is it? Why is it that when we go to console, that we think we really know what we're doing? Think about that as we go through this study for the next couple of days, a couple of times we come together. Chapter 3. They see Job. They don't recognize him. They're there to comfort him. 7 days of silence. And verse number 1 of chapter 3, the silence breaks. Job opens his mouth. He curses the day of his birth. The word curse there is a different word. It's kalal. It's not barak. And this is why, you know, my responsibility as a teacher is to bring out those details so we don't look at the English translation and try to put them in the same boat. But your King James Version, your New King James Version, your American Standard Version is a reliable translation. Never ever doubt that. But these words, he saw the day of his birth as something despicable. It's been tough on him. So those are the things we have to keep in mind. Let's look at a few things. We're going to see that Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar were not really great encouragers. And the reason why is because of some of the things that I want us to take notice of right now. In chapters 4 and 5, we notice Eliphaz. I want us to take notice. We don't have time to look at everything in these couple of weeks that we're going to be looking at the book of Job. But in chapter 4 and verse number 7, notice what Eliphaz had said. He says, remember now, whoever being innocent, whoever perished being innocent, that's the question. Or where were the upright ever cut off? Now think about this. Think about what Eliphaz is asking Job. And also what he's implying. He's implying that Job is not innocent. Apparently, whatever you have done, you're paying for it. Well, we also notice, go to Job 15 and verse number 2. In Job 15, verse number 2, we're just going to be talking about the friends for a couple minutes. Eliphaz, the Temanite, is answering, and he said, should a wise man answer with empty knowledge and fill himself with the east wind? Now, let's think about this. When you think of the east wind, what comes to mind? Does anything in the Old Testament come to mind? The east wind. It's hotter. Good. What else? What episode had the east wind involved? It's the parting of the Red Sea. Exodus chapter 14, verse number 21. Exactly. God used a strong east wind to part the Red Sea. You know what Eliphaz was basically telling Job? You are full of what? Hot air. How dare him? Notice the language. Notice the picture that's being painted. You're full of hot air, Job. The more I was studying this and reading this, I remember closing my Bible for a second, like, is that how we are? Here's a man that just lost almost everything. And I said almost, because he didn't lose his life, and he didn't lose his wife. But he lost it all. And here you got a friend that comes from afar, and he has the nerve to say, Job, you're full of hot air. You're full of hot air. Look at chapter 8. We're running out of time, so we're going to be looking at Bildad real quick. Chapter 8. And the reason why I wanted to deal with his three friends is because according to Elihu and according to God, they spoke in a way that was not right. And chapter 8, verses 1 through 4. Notice what Bildad had the nerve to say. Then Bildad, the Shuhite, answered and said, how long will you speak these things? And the words of your mouth be like a strong wind. Does God subvert judgment? Or does the Almighty pervert justice? Listen to this. If your sons have sinned against him, he has cast them away for their transgression. What is he accusing his sons of? Sinning against God. The things that happened to your sons and your children was because they sinned against God. Really? Well, Bildad, how do you know that? Who told you that, Bildad? Y'all get the point? They're just speaking. I mean, they're surmising. In their mind, we got this. We know why you're going through this, Job. Let's look at another one. Chapter 11. Let's look at Zophar. Zophar is also accusatory. Verses 1 through verse 6. Then Zophar the Naamathite, which means pleasant, answered and said, should not the multitude of words be answered, and should a man full of talk be vindicated? Should your empty talk make men hold their peace, and when you mock, should no one rebuke you? For you have said, my doctrine is pure. Now, brethren, when he said this, I read through those chapters again, 1 through 10. Where did Job say this? You don't find it. But my question is to Zophar, how can you say this when we don't have it recorded? I wanted to make sure. I'm like, well, maybe I missed it in my reading. Maybe I missed it in my study. And I went through it again. And friends, to read the book of Job and the length of the chapters is not always that fun. To read what he went through again and again, but notice what he says. And I am clean in your eyes, but oh, that God would speak and open his lips against you. that he would show you the secrets of wisdom, for they would double your prudence. Know therefore that God exacts from you less than your iniquity deserves. Question. Who gives him the right to say those things? Now, I know what I've done. I've given you his friend's perspective. I haven't given you Job's response. I will give you that. But I do want to give you something that's worthy of us thinking about before we go any further. Look at Job 32 real quick. I meant to give you this passage before. In Job 32, we come across Elihu. And the reason why I want to give you this before is because with this in mind, with this, these words that Elihu says, it actually gives us great perspective on his three friends. So these three men cease answering Job because he was righteous in his own eyes. Then the wrath of Elihu, the son of Barachel, the Buzite, and of the family of Ram, was aroused against Job. His wrath was aroused because he justified himself rather than God. Also against his three friends, his wrath was aroused. Here's why. Because they had found no answer, and yet they did what to Job? They condemned him. But look at Job 42 in verse number 7. So here you have a righteous man saying this about Job and about his three friends, and we focus on his three friends, and now we have Jehovah who knows all things, all of the details. There's not anything that goes on that God doesn't know about. God even knows how many hairs are on our heads, and this is what really baffles me, that when a sparrow hits the ground, even God knows about that. In Job 42 and verse number 7, notice what the Bible says. And so it was, after the Lord had spoken these words to Job, that the Lord said to Eliphaz the Temanite, "My wrath is aroused against you and your two friends, for you have not spoken of me what is right, as my servant Job has." Isn't that a beautiful passage? But the things in which Job was speaking were right things. And even though he attempted to justify himself, the things that he spoke were right. But the things that his three friends were speaking on, they were wrong. I was talking to a good brother the other day, and I was telling him about some of the things that I found in the book of Job. And he said something that I concluded. He said, when I'm talking or preaching, I never ever say that his three friends said anything true. Because you don't know what's true about what they said. You know, we know people like that. That when they talk, we don't know if they're telling us the truth or not. But one person that we can always trust is who? God. You know who else we can trust? Those who live for God. I want us to consider those words. Do we have any other thoughts? Yes, anybody? Do we have any other thoughts? That's right. And that's why, you know, when I quoted Ecclesiastes 9:11, time and chance happen to all men, that is a very soft application. Because God was behind this. God was allowing this to take place. Brother Dennis and then Brother Randy. Oh, you didn't? Okay. Brother Randy. Thank you. Right. No, great, excellent point. Excellent point. One thing that I do, I just try to listen, and I don't ever say, I understand what you're going through. I don't ever say that. I don't ever say that. Because I don't know. Someone loses someone that they love dealing. I don't know what you're dealing with. The only thing I can do is give you scripture. God knows. And isn't that the comfort? That's the comfort right there, that God knows all things. And this is one thing I love about Jehovah, is that he can be merciful, he can be wrathful, he can be graceful, and because he knows all of the information. There's nothing that he doesn't know. So this is why it's important for us to become familiar as much as humanly possible with the scriptures. I think of Psalm 56 and verse number 11, I believe it is, in that area, that God, he knows our pain. He puts our tears in a bottle. When we find ourselves going through struggle because of sin, and we repent of it, yet we still feel bad about it. I'm reminded of Psalm 51. I love what the psalmist said in Psalm 103. He knows our frame. He remembers that we're dust. Reminded of Psalm 23. This is why we have to know the scriptures. And if we're not careful, this is what we'll do. We'll try to diagnose people and misdiagnose them. And we can cause more problems. On Wednesday, we're going to be talking more about Job, but we're going to be looking at the words of Job. We're going to be looking at his words, and we're going to see how this story unfolds, friends. But I wanted to start with his friends, because sometimes we're friends to people, and we want to give them our advice. Well, this is what I think. Let's be careful with that. What we ought to do is, what passage, what context, what pericope, what section of scripture identifies with what you're dealing with, and let God speak to the matter. And friends, I know for a fact we'll never go wrong doing that. We don't sit and say nothing. What we do is we learn what God says about the situation and say something. Because it is the words of God that's going to encourage us in the midst of any and every situation. And friends, I know that it can and it will, because in the end, Job is a very blessed man, and we know he's blessed because James brings that out. May God bless you.